Russia dismisses reports that it's using Iranian drones in its strikes against Ukraine. Protesters across France hold massive rallies over the cost of living crisis amid soaring inflation. UK Prime Minister Liz Truss makes it clear she'll hang on to power despite apologizing for her mistakes only weeks into office. Hi everyone from Tehran. Welcome. The top story this hour, Russia has denied using Iranian drones in strikes against Ukraine amid allegations to that effect by Western officials. The Kremlin spokesman says that Russia is using domestically made drones with Russian names in the attacks. Dmitry Peskov says that he has no information showing purchase of Iranian drones. Ukraine and its Western allies claim that Russia has used Iran-made suicide drones in its recent spate of attacks, especially in Kyiv. The Ukrainian government has downgraded its diplomatic relations with Iran over the allegations. Tehran has roundly rejected the claim. Foreign Minister Hossein Mehmedvedev says that Tehran supplied no drones to Moscow for use in the war in Ukraine, adding that arms deliveries to warring parties will only prolong the crisis. Speaking of Ukraine, the capital city there is hit with new strikes today after the city came under deadly drone attacks by the Russian military. Officials say that three attacks have hit a power facility in northern Kyiv. They're reporting explosions at the site. The president's office says that the target was critical infrastructure. Kyiv was also hit by Russian attacks on Monday. They killed four people and damaged energy facilities and residential buildings. The Russian military has also launched strikes on energy infrastructure in the eastern Ukrainian region of Sumy, killing several people. Attacks on the capital come days after Russia's president blamed Ukraine for an explosion on the key Crimea bridge and promised retaliation. Our correspondent Donetsk Jana Miller has told us why Russia has intensified its attacks on Ukraine recently.
Well, all across Ukraine now, people are buying candles, lanterns in preparation, because it's already been blackouts in Ukraine. Russia, for over a week now, has been hitting energy infrastructure targets. They say this is in retaliation for the attack on Kerch Bridge, but it was also, frankly, inevitable in this conflict. Many Western analysts are very confused as to why Russia hasn't hit these targets months ago. In the beginning days of the war, Russia had very limited goals in Ukraine, but NATO has continued to support Ukraine, so this escalation was inevitable, and Russia very much sees this conflict as an existential conflict. It feels that it needs to win this conflict, especially to secure Crimea. It's interesting that Barack Obama, the former American president, said some years ago that if there was ever a conflict in Ukraine, it's difficult to see how the Russians won't win it, because for the Russians, Ukraine is essential to their geostrategy, if you like, and for America, it's not. So we're seeing the inevitable escalation of strikes from the Russian side. Meanwhile, on the battlefield, Ukraine is having very limited success. They did have some success about a month ago, but now they're sending multiple attacks into the Kherson region with very little achievement. Scores of Ukrainians are dying.
Strong condemnation out of Iran following EU sanctions over its response to the riots in the country. Iran's foreign ministry has promised reciprocal bans on European officials and entities. The ministry's spokesman says that EU sanctions constitute a violation of international law and are a clear example of meddling in Iran's internal affairs. Nasser Kanani says that the EU's decision shows its bias and that it's using human rights as a means to achieve political goals. He added that the EU and its member states already acquired notoriety in Iran as a major violator of human rights due to their inaction and endorsement of harsh U.S. sanctions on the country. Iran's foreign minister, Hossein Amirabdollahian, also took to Twitter earlier to dismiss the sanctions as futile and based on false allegations.
Down a well-worn path of ineffective sanctions, the EU today adopted further superfluous sanctions on Iranian persons. It's an unconstructive act out of miscalculation, based on widespread disinformation. Riots and vandalism are not tolerated anywhere. Iran is no exception.
Amir Abdullahian's tweet came hours after EU foreign ministers imposed sanctions on Iran The list includes 11 individuals and entities. The bans target Iran's police as well as the besieged volunteer forces and the cyber division of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. The Iranian Ministry of Communications and Information Technology is also blacklisted. Some European officials have criticized Iran for its response to the unrest that followed the death of a young woman last month. Mahsa Amini died in hospital days after collapsing at a police station in Iran. A forensic investigation dismissed allegations that she was beaten and attributed the death to an underlying condition. Head of London-based Islamic Human Rights Commission, Masood Chajara, says there is a clear difference between rioting and protesting and that no government in the world allows rioting during protests.
We need to separate the riots from peaceful demonstration. Anyone in their right state of mind will understand the difference between these two and separate them. The reality is people do have legitimate right everywhere in the world. Indeed, in Iran, is part of the Iranian constitution. They have the right to demonstrate. But no one has got the right to commit riots and endanger people's life. I mean, we have seen footage of security forces in Iran being kept and then put a light, petrol put on them and put a light. No government, no authority could allow this sort of behavior to be unleashed in their society, because they have the responsibility and indeed the duty to protect people and create security within the society. You know, I could give you over and over history of what is being done in Britain. I mean, for example, the riots in Bradford, the judge orders and said anyone who holds the stone, even if they don't throw it and they drop it on CCTV, should get 5 years imprisonment. Anyone holding a Molotov cocktail, and even if not throwing it and dropping it, should get 8 years imprisonment.
Now, elsewhere in Europe, workers marched in cities across France as unions are pushing for salary increases to address the cost of living crisis fueled by soaring inflation. Protesters holding banners and chanting slogans flooded the streets, including those in capital Paris. They demand pay hikes to cope with rising prices of essential commodities. Trade unions have also called a nationwide transport strike on Tuesday, causing commuter chaos nationwide. Unions are seeking to capitalize on anger with decades-high inflation to expand a weeks-long industrial action at oil refineries to other sectors. Workers at oil refineries and nuclear plants have already caused fuel shortages in the country. Let me bring in from Bethlehem Scott Ritter. He's a former U.S. Marine Intelligence officer. Scott, good to have you with us. So let's talk about the reason for this and why Parisians are out there in large numbers. Isn't it, I want to ask you how the policies that the Macron administration and other European countries, and it's not only France, adopted regarding this Ukraine war. They already had some problems, and looks like that this has simply added to the problems and now made people angry.
No, you're absolutely right. The notion that France was operating perfectly before the Ukraine crisis is absurd. There were significant problems in France, and the unions were not happy, but the policies undertaken by France and indeed the European Union and all of Europe regarding the Ukraine conflict, especially the policies that target Russian energy, have led to, a disaster in the European economy. One of the reasons why there's runaway inflation in France and elsewhere in Europe is because of the high price of energy. It's literally pricing out the ability of French industries to stay open. French citizens can't afford to pay their energy bills, and it's just going to get worse. So, this isn't, when they say it's about high inflation, it's really a protest against, French policies overall, because it's only going to get worse. And eventually the protesters are going to narrow down their demands to, you know, simply lift the sanctions against Russia, because that is ultimately what needs to be done to resolve this situation, at least, you know, the parts of the situation that deal with runaway inflation.
Okay, thank you so much for that. Scott Ritter from Bethlehem, New York. Now, UK's Prime Minister has apologized to public for her economic mistakes amid backlash over her so-called mini-budget.
I recognise we have made mistakes. I'm sorry for those mistakes, but I've fixed the mistakes. I've appointed a new Chancellor. We have restored economic stability and fiscal discipline. And what I now want to do is go on and deliver for the public.
Well, Truss also insists that she will not be stepping down and would definitely lead her party to general elections, and that of her plan to cut tax for the higher earners sent markets into turmoil and caused uproar in Parliament. Truss was forced to fire her finance minister, Kwasi Kwarteng, over the proposals that were part of her so-called minute budget. She's also facing calls to resign from within her own party. Truss's new economy minister, Jeremy Hunt, now saying that he will reverse almost all tax measures announced in the mini-budget. The UK is grappling with high inflation and slow economic growth that have raised fears of a looming recession in the country.
After weeks of economic and political turmoil, an early announcement by the UK's new finance minister aimed at calming the nerves at home and abroad.
Although the Prime Minister and I are both committed to cutting corporation tax, on Friday she listened to concerns about the mini-budget and confirmed we will not proceed with the cut to corporation tax announced.
And with that, Jeremy Hunt reversed most of an economic package announced by his predecessor, Kwasi Kwarteng, just weeks ago, including a planned cut to income tax.
It made no sense economically. It made no sense politically. And basically, the markets couldn't make any sense of it either. So basically, you've ended up wasting a lot of time and energy reversing a stupid policy that was put in the first place. Simple as that.
But not everything is being reversed. The government is still going to end the cap on bankers' bonuses, meaning bankers will be able to take home more than double their fixed salary when the change is made. And then there is the cap on household energy bills, Liz Truss's most popular policy, that was supposed to be in place for 2 years. It'll now be reviewed in April next year. Much of the economic and political turbulence in the UK is blamed on the war in Ukraine and unpredictable global market forces. Many experts say there is another important culprit.
Ultimately, a lot of this nonsense and the idiocy of Boris Johnson, the idiocy of Liz Truss, actually, its roots are in Brexit. Because what has Brexit done to the British economy? It's basically knocked 4 to 5% off the GDP. That's led to a loss of tax revenues for the government. It's led to problems for business because they haven't got the supply of labour that they need. All right. And it's basically acted and a huge waste of money, of course, on customs officials and this and that and the bureaucracy for business.
Liz Truss's premiership has been nothing less than a roller coaster. Her decisions have given the opposition Labour Party a comfortable lead in opinion polls and badly damaged her credibility with her own party.
With the new Chancellor ripping up her economic plan, the Prime Minister now has to regain support of the MPs. But with the amount of plotting that's going on against her at the moment, whether or not she can do that is anyone's guess. Saeed Bourza, London.
Now, new data exposing the depth of the ongoing cost of living crisis in the UK. A food charity says millions of cash-strapped Britons have made ends meet by skipping meals over the past months. The Food Foundation says that hunger levels increased more than twofold since January. Around 10 million adults and 4 million children did not afford regular meals last month. Some of these people had to go hungry for an entire day. According to charities, the government must halt cuts to benefits and take stronger measures to protect the vulnerable. People in the UK have been feeling the squeeze of soaring prices for months. Britain's inflation is now at a four-decade high, and that's driven by inflated food and energy prices due to the crisis in Ukraine and sanctions on Russia. Now, in other news, the Palestinian Authority has hailed Australia's decision. Canberra said it's reversing the previous administration decision to recognize West Al Quds as the Israeli capital. Palestinian Foreign Minister Riyad al-Maliki has described the turnaround as a correction of a mistake previously made by Canberra. Australian Foreign Minister Penny Wong announced the reversal of the 2018 decision a few hours ago. Wong said that only talks between Israelis and Palestinians should determine the status of Al-Quds. The announcement has angered Israel. The regime's premier has strongly criticized it. The regime has also summoned the Australian ambassador to lodge a protest. The former Australian government took the step on Al-Quds after similar moves by the U.S. and a few other Western countries. The political commentator Mick Napier joined us earlier with his take on Australia's move to drop its recognition of West Al-Quds as the Israeli capital.
The previous government in Australia would be likely to pander to a racist electoral base and would see support for Israel as an emblem of that right-wing position inside the society. But at the end of the day, the question is not whether they support the move of the embassy to Israel. The question is, while they oppose that because their electoral base would find it, you know, wrong, do they continue to sell arms? Do they continue to pay lip service to a two-state solution while Israel gobbles up parts of Palestine every day, every month, every year? And do Western governments continue to facilitate that? And the answer, of course, as even the dogs in the straw, is yes. While arms continue to flow and Israel is allowed and given a green light to continue to dispossess the Palestinians, the facilitation of Israel's full-spectrum criminality continues in Australia and in Britain.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned.
وذاق طعم عذابها بمعصيته وحبه ليس بين أطباقها بجرمه وجريرته وهو يضج إليك ضجيج مؤمل لرحمتك ويناديك بلسان أهل توحيدك ويتوسل إليك بربوبيتك.
Brothers and sisters, we have reached this excerpt of the Divine Kumail supplication. أَفَتُرَاكَ سُبْحَانَكَ يَا إِلَهِي وَبِحَمْدِكَ تَسْمَعُ فِيهَا سَوْتَ عَبْدٍ مُسْلِمٍ سُجِنَ فِيهَا بِمُخَالَفَتِهِ وَذَاقَ تَعْمَ عَذَابِهَا بِمَعْصِيَتِهِ وَحُبِسَ بَيْنَ أَطْبَاقِهَا بِجُرْمِهِ وَجَرِيرَتِهِ وَهُوَ يَضِجُّ إِلَيْكَ ضَجِيجَ مُؤَمِّلٍ لِرَحْمَتِكَ وَيُنَادِيكَ بِلِسَانِ أَهْلِ تَوْحِيدِكَ وَيَتَوَسَّلُ إِلَيْكَ بِرُبُوبِيَّتِكَ. Can't you see yourself? Glory be to you, my Allah, and yours is the praise. Hearing within the fire the voice of a slave surrendered to you, imprisoned there because of his violations, suffering the pangs of its torment because of his disobedience, confined within its levels because of his sin and crime, while he laments before you with the lamentation of the one who is hopeful for your mercy. He calls upon you with the tongue of those who profess your oneness and entreats you by your lordship. We said earlier that one of the benefits of having these descriptions of the purgatory, either in the Holy Quran or the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt and the Infallibles, is that the true believer believes more, he gets astonished, and he takes refuge to Allah sincerely. And let me clarify this point, that whenever you hear that the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam are the Holy Quran's counterpart, this means that they do exactly the same thing, although we are not needless of one or the other. It is the duty of all the Muslims around the world to understand the Holy Quran, to put its teachings into practice. And this is exactly what the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam do with the Holy Quran. This is what we have seen from them during their lives. In this case, the descriptions of the Ahlul Bayt and the Infallibles from the purgatory and the descriptions of the Holy Quran from that event help us altogether to believe in the Lord of the worlds and what is going to happen and take sincere refuge in Him.
My Lord, glory and praise be to you. Would you disregard the voice of a Muslim slave, imprisoned in hell for his disobedience and imprisoned within its pits for his evil doings and misdeeds, crying out to you the cries of one who has faith in your mercy, and calling out to you in the language of those who believe in your unity and seeking to approach you by means of your epithet.
Thank you, Allah, that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
Let us have a look at one narration about the importance of fear of chastisement. The great scholar Mulla Fadlullah Kashani narrates in his exegesis book Minhaj that once the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alaihi wasallam stood for prayers in the mosque. He recited Hamd or Fatiha chapter of the Holy Quran, and he began Hijr chapter till he reached this verse: "Wa inna jahannama lamaw'iduhum ajma'in," and surely hell is promised place of them all. لها سبعة أبواب لِكُلِّ بَابٍ مِّنْهُمْ جُزْءٌ مَقْسُومٌ. It has seven gates, and for every gate is a special class of sinners assigned. As it is narrated, an Arab woman who was performing prayer alongside the Prophet ﷺ fainted hearing these verses. When the Prophet ﷺ finished his prayer, he was informed of this event and he saw the occurrence. He ordered some people to splash water into the woman's face. And after that, she regained consciousness again. So the Prophet ﷺ said, "How did you feel?" She said, "When I saw you in prayer, I got interested in performing prayer with you. I got restless when you recited these two verses. وَإِنَّ جَهَنَّمَ لَمَوْعِدُهُمْ أَجْمَعِينَ لَهَا سَبْعَةُ أَبْوَابٍ لِكُلِّ بَابٍ مِّنْهُمْ جُزْءٌ مَقْسُومٌ. I got restless when I heard you reciting these two verses." And then she said, "Woe be to me, because any of my limbs will be placed in one of the seven gates of hell." Prophet ﷺ said, "This is not the case. This verse means each specific group of sinners will be chastised in one of the seven gates of hell." Then the woman told the Prophet, "I have nothing but seven slaves. I free each of them to be freed from one of the hell gates." And then the revelation angel was descended and said, "O Messenger of Allah, give good tidings to the Arab woman that the Almighty has closed all the hell gates and opened the gates of paradise for this woman." This is what happens when a true believer hears or sees the descriptions of the purgatory in the Holy Quran or in the words of the Ahlul Bayt. He or she will take a true and sincere refuge to the Almighty Allah, and he will get himself prepared for that day to come. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
We gather at a vital time for the United Kingdom. These are stormy days.
The UK Prime Minister Liz Truss may not have known what she walked into when she took over the premiership just months ago from the former Prime Minister Boris Johnson. an economy battered by COVID-19, then the Ukraine conflict, which impacted the UK's economy negatively. With runaway inflation and a cost of living crisis, she had to come up with a plan. That plan was presented by the finance minister, or exchequer at the time, Kwasi Kwarteng. But she could never have anticipated the firestorm and crisis that erupted afterwards. After several U-turns of whether or not she would go through with what was called a mini-budget plan, she was forced to finally make amendments to the plan. And what many have called a move to save herself and her job, she fired the now former finance minister, Kwasi Kwarteng.
I met the former chancellor earlier today. I was incredibly sorry to lose him.
She replaced him with Jeremy Hunt, a former health secretary and foreign secretary, who was announced as Kwarteng's successor.
It was a mistake to cut the top rate of tax at a period when we were asking everyone to make sacrifices. And it was a mistake to fly blind and not to back up the economic plans that were announced with an independent forecast from the Office for Budget Responsibility.
Truss scrapped the pledge to reverse predecessor Boris Johnson's hike of corporation tax from 19% to 25%, a decision estimated to restore around £18 billion, or $20.1 billion, to the UK Treasury's coffers by 2026. Her explanation for scrapping the plan: markets were not ready for it.
But it is clear that parts of our mini-budget went further and faster than markets were expecting. So the way we are delivering our mission right now has to change.
The Institute of Fiscal Studies had doubts on this so-called mini-budget, basically calling into question where the money was going to come from. It said that unfunded tax cuts meant that the UK will need £60 billion in spending cuts. It also said that this would leave ministers making serious reductions in public services. This puts into question the claims made by the former Chancellor, Kwasi Kwarteng.
The government has been clear that protecting consumers is our primary focus and shapes our entire approach to this issue.
As for the 2.5% targeted growth, nonsense. Said the UK will struggle to grow at more than 0.8% on average over the next 5 years. In other words, the £45 billion cost of the mini-budget would wipe out any financial space left to the Chancellor by his predecessor, swelling Britain's debt as the share of national income for at least the next 5 years. The turmoil that exists in the UK mirrors what is happening across many European countries. Economies are under strain and people are suffering as a result. Wrong fiscal policies can be the reason for this suffering, but political directives also impact people's lives and well-being. That couldn't be more evident on the EU, led by the US, to continue the war on Russia, even if it meant that their own citizens would suffer as a result. But cracks are emerging following the US lead. For example, France has joined Germany in accusing the U.S. of using Ukraine war to overcharge for gas. After the Ukraine conflict, the EU was forced to start importing LNG from the U.S. as well as other countries. But the U.S.'s share had increased sharply from 28 to 45%. On the other hand, deliveries from Russia dropped by 75%. But this statement from the French economy minister, Bruno Le Maire, shows that France may have caught on to the U.S. role in the Ukraine conflict. Le Maire recently told French MPs that the conflict in Ukraine must not result in the U.S. economic domination and a weakened Europe. This is while the economy minister, Robert Habeck from Germany, accused LNG exporters, including the U.S., of charging too much for gas at the time when Europe's biggest economy is struggling to balance its energy mix without Russian supplies, and when German companies are closing down factories due to high gas costs. Electricity cuts in the UK and emergency gas rationing in Germany are just a couple of signs of how European leaders are sacrificing their country in order to defeat Russia and the less threat that they face from it. As for their economies, Europe has already slipped into a recession, and there are no signs that it can devise a plan that would lower energy costs to pre-Ukraine conflict levels in order to save their economies.
whether signed in the White House or overseen by a U.S. president or Secretary of State, the United States has almost always had a role in any and all negotiations between Palestinian and Israeli sides. Looking at some of the more important instances of these talks, one can think of the first Oslo Accord in 1993 that was signed in Washington in the presence of then-U.S. President Bill Clinton. The 1999 Sharm el-Sheikh Memorandum that was signed in Egypt was also overseen by the U.S. through Madeleine Albright, then Secretary of State of the Clinton administration. The unsuccessful Camp David summits in the year 2000 was overseen directly by Bill Clinton himself. Following the unsuccessful peace talks, Clinton would make another effort at influencing the Israeli-Palestinian relations through the aptly named Clinton parameters, showing the extent of his and U.S. involvement in the talks. Sometimes this influence even meant that the fate of Palestine would be discussed without the participation of any Palestinian representative, as was the case in the Camp David Agreement in 1978, which was signed by Egyptian President, Israeli Prime Minister, and then U.S. President Jimmy Carter, without even an Arabic version of the documents. These showed the never-wavering U.S. Pledge of Allegiance to Israel, a pledge that will always protect Israeli interests which would automatically go against Palestinian interests. Among the most important of these interests is a trinity of inalienable rights defined by the Palestine National Council in 1974, which consists of Palestinians' rights to self-determination, an independent state, and most importantly, right of return. The most recent example of neglecting these rights occurred in 2020. During Trump's tenure, the deal of the century was presented, which many later called the flop of the century. The Trump peace plan was titled Peace to Prosperity, a vision to improve the lives of the Palestinian and Israeli people. But it was far from that. The plan had been delayed by 2 years and previously rejected by the Palestinians, who were not invited to the meeting. The plan never materialized, however, since, again, it was not representative of the Palestinians' rights on major core issues of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. The first time Israel attempted to make the smallest bit of compromise was at the Camp David summit in 2000. Israel said it would be willing to allow 100,000 Palestinian refugees back to their homeland, while the millions of others had to be resettled wherever they were at the time. Also, Yasser Arafat, then chairman of the Palestine Liberation Organization, would have to forego the idea of right of return completely from then on. Similar ludicrous proposals that were rejected by Arafat were all proposed with the U.S. being on board with these proposals. The U.S. involvement in the so-called peace talks have time and again shown Palestinians and their officials that the U.S. is not to be trusted as a neutral party. On the sidelines of the sixth summit of the Conference on Interaction and Confidence-Building Measures in Asia in Kazakhstan, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas had a meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin. In it, he expressed that he is happy with Russia's position on Palestine. He also said that he would only accept U.S. involvement in the conflict resolution process if other parties of the Quartet on the Middle East were present. The Middle East Quartet, established in Madrid in 2002, is a foursome of nations and international and supranational entities involved in mediating the Israeli-Palestinian peace negotiations. Its members are the United Nations, the United States, the European Union, and Russia. Palestine's hand is now one of unity, since the Palestinian factions have all established peace amongst themselves, including Hamas and Fatah. Palestinian factions signed reconciliation agreements in Algeria. Hamas, Fatah, and 12 other Palestinian groups agreed to hold legislative and presidential elections within 1 year after the successful talks held in Algiers. Meanwhile, when it comes to peace talks between Israel and Palestine, Abbas has stressed that Washington should not be given free hand to act alone in resolving the decades-long Palestine-Israeli conflict.
Rising rivalries between the U.S. and China are set to dominate the coming years in the 21st century. That is because the U.S. has unveiled its long-delayed national security strategy, where China is named as the most consequential geopolitical challenge for the regime in Washington. that means that Washington is prioritizing winning over China, as Beijing is seen as the only global rival to the U.S. Jake Sullivan, the U.S. National Security Advisor, said, "The People's Republic of China harbors the intention and increasingly the capacity to reshape the international order in favor of one that tilts the global playing field to its benefit." The U.S. strategy further insists that China represents the most consequential challenge to the global order. It also says the U.S. must win the economic arms race with the superpower if it hopes to retain its global influence. The strategy has warned that China's rapid advances in technology is aimed at molding the world order. The strategy is in line with the rhetoric pursued by the Biden administration and its predecessor. Biden officials have accused Russia and China of looking to change the so-called rules-based order. The term has come to be seen as a synonym for Washington-led world order. The Biden administration has entangled itself in a number of global crises, including the war in Ukraine. The Washington regime encouraged the war in Ukraine by sending more weapons into the conflict zone. Washington is using the crisis to contain Russia. And by encouraging its allies to sever their energy ties with Moscow, Washington is trying to push European countries into its own sphere of influence. Furthermore, Washington is stoking tensions in the East Asia region by strengthening its ties with the Chinese Taipei. Back in August 2022, the U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visited Taiwan, drawing an angry reaction from China. Beijing has warned that it will not tolerate Washington's meddlesome interference in its own affairs. But Washington's increasingly belligerent behavior in Europe and East Asia has pushed Russia and China closer together. They have forged closer ties in a variety of fields, including energy, business, and defense areas. Furthermore, both Moscow and Beijing are key members of the BRICS groups of countries and the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Two bodies are playing key roles in shifting the Western-led balance toward a multipolar world. Russia and China have also forged closer ties with countries like Iran and India, which are emerging powers in the shifting geostrategic relations worldwide. It is now widely believed that Washington's ambitions to still lead the world is facing tough challenges. It appears that the regime in Washington has no longer the capability that it once possessed to dictate its hegemony.
Iran hosting the 36th International Conference on Islamic Unity in the capital Tehran, which hosts 200 Shia and Sunni clerics as well as thinkers from some 60 different countries. The annual event puts into discussion the challenges faced by the Muslim world. It's widely believed that uniting Muslims in the region and worldwide would be a great step in alleviating the problems they're facing. Violence and wars are killing Muslims in Yemen, Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria. Imam Khomeini, the late founder of the Islamic Republic, proposed the idea in the 1980s to bring Muslims together against the imperialist aggressions and interventions of Western powers. Over the years, Iran has championed the cause of Islamic unity and brotherhood. This is when many other Muslim countries have brazenly become facilitators and enablers of America's neo-imperialism. The highlight of this year's event was a speech by Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi to the participants of the conference. During his speech, President Raisi hailed resistance as the only viable path to confronting the Israeli regime. Raisi further said that history has proven wrong those countries who assumed that negotiations would save Palestine.
The biggest human rights violators are the U.S., Israel, and some Western countries, despite their claims to be human rights defenders. See their record, what they have done to their own people and the people around the globe.
Raisi also referred to previous deals reached with the Tel Aviv regime on the issue of Palestine, saying the regime has refused to honor the commitments it has made. He also criticized the Arab governments that normalized their ties with Israel and the Zionist regime. He said the U.S. and the Israeli regime are trying to marginalize Palestinians through normalization deals. Raisi was referring to the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Sudan and Morocco, which normalized their ties with Israel in late 2020 under deals pushed by former U.S. President Donald Trump. One of the issues that was highlighted in this conference was how Muslims in Palestine are brutally oppressed by the Israeli regime, which is supported by the West and some regional Arab states that have betrayed the cause of Palestine. The normalization deals with the Israeli regime has emboldened Tel Aviv to carry out more war crimes in the occupied Palestinian territories.
It's no surprise to us that the House of Saud has teamed up with the Israeli regime. They claim to be Muslims, but in fact they are the puppets of the Israelis and do what Tel Aviv dictates to them.
So far this year, more than 100 Palestinians have been killed in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds amid a massive increase in Israeli military raids. Israel has killed five times as many Palestinians in 2022 than it killed in the same period in 2021. And on the issue of Palestinian prisoners, nearly 300 rights groups have condemned the continued detention of Palestinians in Israeli prisons. They called on the international community to act against the crimes of Israel. The groups also censured Israel for its administrative detention of Palestinians. Conferences like the one held in Iran helped the Palestinian cause by continuing to point to the atrocities committed by the Israeli regime. If the Palestinian cause is not the most important issue for Muslims and the wider world, then Israeli forces will continue using excessive force in their dealings with the Palestinians without being held accountable.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, self-restraint. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome everyone. This is A to Z show from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host Hussein Hinzano. Now in today's lesson, we are talking about self-restraint. One of the most important factors for self-building and self-refinement is guarding and supervising and paying attention towards the self. A wise person who is concerned about his well-being and prosperity would not remain ignorant about his own moral abjectness and physical disease. Rather, he will be continuously guarding and supervising his self, and he will be strictly controlling his habits and his etiquette, actions. He will also be controlling his deeds and even his thoughts. So we will discuss this matter in details as follows. First of all, when we are talking about self-restraint, what are the things that we need to do in order for us to control this habit of self-restraint? One of them is by recording our deeds, the recording of deeds. The Quranic verses and traditions from the Holy Prophet and his Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam indicate that all actions and all deeds, all sayings, even all types of breathings and intentions and thoughts of human beings, they are recorded in his letter of deeds and will remain filed for the day of resurrection. And each person will be judged on that day, strictly in accordance to his performance. For example, God Almighty said in the Holy Quran, "The day mankind will issue forth in scattered groups to be shown their deeds. And whoso doth good an atom's weight will see it then, and whoso doth ill on atom's weight will see it then." Therefore, if we believe that all our movements and actions and deeds, sayings and even thoughts are being registered, they're being recorded and saved, then how could we remain naive about the consequences arising therein? Definitely, we're going
to restrain our own selves. This is the only way we can restrain our own selves. First of all, is by knowing that our deeds are being recorded. This will definitely lead us to restrain our own selves.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. We're talking about self-restraint. Now, what are the factors that will make us achieve the habit of self-restraint, will make us practice the habit of self-restraint? One of them is the accounting on the day of judgment. For us to understand that on the day of judgment, all our deeds are going to be accounted for. They're going to be put in account. A lot of Quranic verses and traditions confirm that human beings will be accounted for their deeds accurately on the day of resurrection. All their deeds, whether small or big, shall be checked, and even the most insignificant action shall not be neglected. For example, God Almighty said in the Holy Quran, "And we set a just balance for the day of resurrection, so that no soul is wronged in thought in aught, though it be of the weight of a grain of mustard seed, we will bring it, and we suffice for recognize." This is a saying from the Quran. This is the verse from the Quran that talks about the meaning of the day of judgment. What will be happening on the day of judgment? On the day of judgment, the accountability that is going to take place on the day of judgment is something that we should ponder on in order for us to attain the habit of self-restraint. So the habit of self-restraint can only be practiced by us pondering on a few issues. First of all, is by us recognizing and understanding that on the day of judgment, all that we do in this world is going to be accounted for. Thank you so much for listening to this show. Until next episode, inshallah, we will talk more about this. Fi amanillah, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Russia dismisses reports that it's using Iranian drones in its strikes against Ukraine.